Bitcoin, you know, is a monetary network. It was never intended to be a shitcoin database.
The way that they're going about this is a really, really bad look, really bad precedent.
So that's what's upsetting people, because they think that this is going to bloat the blockchain and potentially make it much more difficult for people to run their own node.
If somebody asks you for a seed phrase, just that in and of itself should be the biggest red flag. Could just destroy the thing and, you know, throw it away and never look back.
But he's a Bitcoiner. I can just hear the simps.
Be mindful where you put your data anywhere when you're buying anything, really, especially if it's related to Bitcoin.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. I have Rick and Tony with me. Guys, wild week in Bitcoin. Let's jump right in here. So we're going to talk a bit about the everything going on in Bitcoin Core. Mechanic had this tweet that I think is sort of telling. He said, the language has changed. It was understood that core devs follow the community consensus, blah, blah, blah. The current narrative from apologists, however, is if you don't like Core, go run something else. That is a change in attitude that's noteworthy, and the conversation around this malicious PR is mired in credentialism and ivory tower condescension. Alrighty, so Rick, why don't you give a quick, high-level, non-technical overview of approximately what's going on for anyone listening? Like, this is such a touchy subject. So Rick, we're going to give you some grace. Just kind of give a very broad overview.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm a bit nervous about sticking my head above the parapet and talking about this, right? Because I don't know if anyone who's been watching this on Twitter, apparently, according to some people, unless you're a core developer, you're not allowed to have an opinion on this, right? And I should state very clearly that I'm a marketeer, not a developer. So I am definitely way out over my skis, and I'm wading into territory where I don't have the technical ability of some people who are debating this, right? But what I can do is, if I'm left of the bell curve on the IQ thing, maybe I can try and explain it in a way that other people who are left of on the bell curve of IQ can understand. So here's my very, very basic understanding of what's going on here. So the whole thing centers around this feature of Bitcoin called op return, right? And all you really need to know about that is it's a method where you can add little messages whenever you send a Bitcoin transaction. And there's some pretty famous ones that most people probably already know about, right? I think in 2016, there was like a rumor saying the WikiLeaks founder had died. So the WikiLeaks team sent some Bitcoin transactions and they put stuff in the op return to say, no, Julian's still alive. And that's quite interesting, right? Because then everyone could verify that this was legitimate and that was fake news. There was another example. There was some guy like proposed to his wife by putting a little message in his transaction. So that's now recorded on the blockchain forever. And this wasn't really like particularly controversial with anyone, right? Okay, there's a little bit of data going in the transactions and being stored forever in the blockchain, but people weren't particularly upset because it was pretty sporadic, like, you know, didn't happen a lot. And also, these little messages were pretty small, right? Because there's limits set on this that you can only put like 83 bytes of data into a transaction. So that's where we were originally, right? And the other thing is that if you were running Bitcoin Core on your node, then you also had access to settings in your node, right? Where you could go in and you could actually reduce the amount of data you were going to willingly sort of accept and relay through your mempool to zero. So if you didn't want to interact with these transactions at all, then you are able as a user to decide, you know what, that's not for me. I don't want to touch those transactions. So largely everyone relatively happy. What's causing the controversy? It all stems from Bitcoin Core are now releasing like an update, right, to their client software. And what they're proposing they're going to do is, first of all, completely remove this 83-byte limit so that you can put all sorts of data within a Bitcoin transaction, right? And that could be, people think you could use it to, like, notarize documents or, you know, put a manifesto, like, big, long text on there. And, of course, all the idiots that want to sell, like, stupid monkey pictures and cat pictures and all that sort of rubbish, they can start stuffing them in there as well. What's really upsetting people is two things. Number one,
they're upset because, you know, like myself, you know, I believe that Bitcoin should just be used as a monetary network, right? That's all I'm interested in. All I've ever wanted is to be able to send transactions to other people without the state getting in the middle, without banks inflating the currency away and all that good stuff. I really couldn't care less about trying to use it as a database to store useless pictures and all sorts of other junk. So that's what's upsetting people, because they think that this is going to bloat the blockchain and potentially make it much more difficult for people to run their own node at home. And that maybe puts us on a trajectory where things start getting more and more difficult, because you don't want this centralizing pressure where actually the cost and the infrastructure requirements for running a node get out of the reach of just your everyday people, right? You're starting to head towards like Ethereum in that way. Like, not many people run an ETH node because it's just impossible and too expensive to do. But perhaps the really big controversy here is that the change that Core are making is also going to remove your ability to change these settings. So like, think of that for a moment. That to me is really interesting, because now they're forcing this change on anybody running Bitcoin Core rather than them having the option to turn it on and off or whatever like they did before. So again, if it's complicated, right? But if you're on Twitter, what you'll see is now loads of people are arguing between running Bitcoin Core or running a different version of Bitcoin software called Bitcoin Knots, which was created by Luke Dashia, right? And Bitcoin Knots sticks more to the original and gives you more control over filtering these spam transactions. So a lot of people, so that's the schism, right? And there's a lot more detail to it, but we could spend literally hours on it. I think if I could say anything to anyone who is like confused or concerned, my advice would be this, right? First of all, you're not under any immediate threat, right? Like, no one can, like, your funds are safe. It doesn't mean anyone can steal your Bitcoin or anything like that. This is also not a protocol change, right? So nothing to do with Bitcoin's protocol is changing. You know, the supply cap's still there. Everything else works the same. It's just the piece of software that you use to interact with the network. The real point here is that if you want to be sovereign, you can choose whatever software you want to run. So if you want to run a node with Bitcoin Core, you can do that. You can run a node with Bitcoin Notch. You can do that as well. And you could even run a version with Bitcoin Core, but then just not update to adopt these new changes. So the point is, you have lots of options. And I think the key here is, like, don't panic. You don't have to make any rash decisions. You're not under this like immediate pressure. So just maybe go and try and understand the problem as best you can, and then come to your own decision. That's what a sovereign individual does, is they run their own node and they decide what software they're going to run. So look, I've probably made a real hash of that, right? Compared to the guy's high Bitcoin mechanic, but that's the best I can offer you within sort of 7 minutes in a way that hopefully lays out the broad brush of what's upset everybody.
Yeah. Tony, why don't you go, and then I'll kind of give my thoughts.
Man, this is a bit of a philosophical debate, like more of an ideological debate. Bitcoin, you know, is a monetary network. It was never intended to be a shitcoin database. And so someone found a little glitch in the system at one point and started to abuse it with this spam. And so it started like it was like a dumpster fire of junk on the Bitcoin network. And so these filters are in place to allow those who don't want this garbage to be filtered out. Now, it's about choice, right? Like, if you don't care, you don't care. But if you do care, you have the option to kick it out. I personally am not a fan of anything that's not monetary on the Bitcoin network. If you want to dabble in this shit, there's other blockchains that are happily built for this. You can go to the mother of shitcoins, the Ethereum blockchain, or the other shit one, the Solana one, and you can do all you want over there. Bitcoin is supposed to be a pristine blockchain made for money. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. I think, you know, there's a bit of that going on here. And the argument of Bitcoin Core that it doesn't work anyhow because people are going to do it no matter what, that is complete rubbish as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's almost like telling somebody, don't install an anti-malware on your computer because you're still, you know, likely to catch something, even if you do have that protection. But a good anti-malware on your computer will still protect you from 99% of the junk that's out there. And so every once in a while, if there's something new, you adapt and you get rid of it. But if they want to remove the ability, then they're sort of playing the gatekeepers. And that is something that is a big, big red line that you do not cross. And so there are options to place your vote against this. So in the case of Bitcoin Knots, it's a 30-second install on most popular Bitcoin nodes. And it just casts your vote that no, you're not going to decide how I run my node and what I store on it. This is what I choose. I personally think there should be more options like this just to keep people in check. So again, you know, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. And I'm hoping more of the community would push back against this and we'd go back to the old cypherpunk mentality when it came to Bitcoin. Back then, 15 years ago, conversations like this would have ended in 30 seconds. Like no one would have even contemplated having anything other than financial data on the Bitcoin blockchain. Now, all of a sudden, we're being a bit more relaxed. You know, why not? Why not? Like, don't be so rude. Don't be so hostile. In the same way, Europe lost its identity by opening the migrant floodgates. Oh, come on. We're nice people. Let's welcome everybody. And look at the shithole they're in now. So if you allow Bitcoin to lose its identity, at some point, you're going to run into problems you're not even considering right now. So I think we should go back to that old, clean, pure cypherpunk mentality. Bitcoin is created for money. That's it. You want to play with something else, there's like thousands of other blockchains where you can register your nonsense on it. So I vote against this Bitcoin Core thing. And the fact that they're censoring people is a very, very big red flag for me. Because based on past experience, that tells me that either they've been compromised or someone on that team is accepting bribes. And the fact that you've got these bullshit influencers acting all defensive all of a sudden because they're invested in companies that benefit from this change should also put off alarm bells for everybody in the community. So be very careful about what you see out there and who you listen to and just watch what they do. It's all you cannot, like the truth is always in your face if you're paying close attention.
Yeah, I think that's well said. Well, Tony, I think we can kiss any hope of YouTube monetization goodbye after bringing up the migrant crisis in Europe. But I think you raised some really good points, great analogies. I have so many thoughts. I'll try to just maybe break down a few. So first and foremost, it's very clear that there's nothing even resembling rough consensus about this change. The fact that this is such a contentious, heated debate tells me everything I need to know that they should not do it and that it's ideologically driven. And, hopefully I'm not sued for this. It seems to me that there could be money behind this that would influence this decision, right? Like there are people who could stand to make money on NFT style shit on the blockchain or whatever. That's what part of the reason Mechanic got kicked off of the GitHub discussion was because someone else had pointed out a potential conflict of interest for LOP. That guy got silenced. And then when Mechanic acknowledged that's stupid to censor someone for pointing out a potential conflict of interest, then he got censored. So obviously, the way that they're going about this is a really, really bad look, really bad precedent. I think that's almost irrefutable, whether or not you think the change is a good one. That's maybe my first thing. The second thing is Bitcoin as it exists today without this change is something that now, hundreds of thousands, millions of people have opted into, and to fundamentally change it in some crucial way like this is, in best case, maybe nothing happens and the free market works and all the nonsense on the blockchain just gets filtered out because it's too expensive or whatever. Worst case though, you're rug pulling a ton of people who have bought proxies like ETFs, who have been running their own node, but maybe don't understand that they should be upgrading or at least considering an upgrade to something like Knots. I think there's a lot of complacency the further into Bitcoin adoption we get. And so there are a lot of people who would probably hear this conversation and philosophically say, okay, yeah, I should upgrade, but aren't going to hear this conversation, don't know to upgrade, are going to update Bitcoin Core just habitually because there are going to be, you know, patches and things like that that come along. And then they're going to be feeding this beast that many of us are trying to avoid. Most people have opted into Bitcoin. And by most, I mean like 99.9% would be my best guess, have opted into Bitcoin because of its monetary properties. We don't say, like I shared this meme, it's like, fix my inability to put pictures on the blockchain, fix the world. Like no one says that. It's fix the money, fix the world. Like we're all here for money. And by all, I mean effectively everybody. And to try coming up with some way of creative way of turning Bitcoin into more of an Ethereum world computer, you can trade pictures, upload videos, like whatever. Like it's not why we're here. Go, you know, go hard fork, do something else, like take it a different direction if that's what you want to do. And you know what? They know that no one else is going to do that. And so they want to push this through best they can without having to break consensus and without having to hard fork. So to me, that's kind of the signal as to the side we, you know, the side I take on all of this. Now, Rick, you sent me a meme. I'm going to share this. One thing for everyone who's listening to this, and it sounds horrible and existential. One thing to keep in mind, I haven't been around as long. I wasn't here for the block size wars. Rick, you remember that. But Bitcoiners have always been fighting each other. And so the meme here for anyone listening is these two girls fighting. And one girl, it's labeled Bitcoiners. The other girl's labeled other Bitcoiners. And then there's a guy sitting in the background. Is he filming? Or just hanging out? What's he doing? And it says also Bitcoiners. But basically, Bitcoiners are always fighting. And that's just kind of part of the drill. So I don't know if either one you want to comment on that or maybe ease everyone's concerns to some degree.
Well, yeah. I mean, my experience in Bitcoin is this happens a lot that we have these big fights, but I think that's a feature, not a bug. You know, it's open source software and everyone's going to come with a slightly different opinion. And actually, if we want to find the best solutions, sometimes, you know, you have a bit of sort of friction while we all sort of sort this out. But without these arguments and without these debates, you would never find the right solution. And I think, you know, something you touched on, Michael, I think what's really upsetting people is that Core are just kind of pushing this unilaterally and not listening to anybody else and sort of saying things like, oh, you know, if you're not a Core contributor, you shouldn't really have an opinion. I'll tell you what that reminds me of is it's like something like, you know, 99% of all scientists agree that ... And they're kind of saying 99% of all core contributors agree that ... And I'm like, no. We don't do this trust thing. We don't do this trust thing. We do this verify thing and we should have free choice. You shouldn't be pushing things unilaterally. So interesting times. But yeah, I think that the things that calm people down is like, this is kind of like par for the course with Bitcoin. And, you know, just don't freak out and wait and see how it plays out. And everything will probably be okay in the end.
Yeah, I agree. All righty. Up next, I'm going to play this video from Howard Lutnick.
I know people have all sorts of things to say about it, but in the end, it's not a currency, it's a commodity. And once you embrace the concept of a commodity, you'll see how beautiful that is and how that fits into almost every thoughtful box.
But he's a Bitcoiner. I can just hear the simps. Listen, I think Howard Lutnick's probably going to pump your bags, everyone. So, you know, maybe you can cheer him on for that. He doesn't get it. He's not going to change the world with his version of Bitcoin as a commodity and not a currency. Well, that's my opinion. Tony, why don't you take this one first?
Well, what did you expect him to say, man? When what world will a politician admit that there's a competition to their local product, right? So that's the narrative that all governments are going to push, at least in the short term, that it's a commodity, digital gold, to hoard, never spend, you know, because the minute 8 billion people realize that this is a medium of exchange and money, all of these guys are rendered ineffective and irrelevant 5 minutes later. So I think they're petrified of this. I don't think they can stop it. Maybe by assuming that if they push this narrative, they'll sort of maybe delay it a little bit. But it's very clear that Bitcoin is being used as money in many, many, many parts of the world, and it's only going to increase in that direction. So thinking you're going to sucker people into believing that this is just a commodity is not going to work. In the same way they fought the store of value initially, Bitcoin is illegal and Bitcoin is for criminals, and now all of a sudden They're killing each other to build the biggest Bitcoin strategic reserves. Eventually, you know, the medium of exchange thing will also dominate. And then maybe they'll try to attack the unit of value, but they'll also fail in that. Because again, for the first time, Bitcoin is an asset that we've never seen. It exists outside the system. No one can change or control it. They can maybe persuade behavior, but, you know, as we're clearly seeing, a lot more people are understanding Bitcoin and the way it's intended and are using it as such. So if you're simping for politicians, you know, people like him for sure will pump your bags. But if you think their message is going to change Bitcoin in any way, shape or form for those that understand it, that is a big, big mistake. I don't think it's going to happen. In fact, I think it's just a matter of time before they bend the knee again. And, you know, we go a next leg up on that front.
Yeah, this one really underscores my point that the point I've been making for a long time. I have concerns that we're going to be trapped in, like, just our mindset is Bitcoiners. Not mine personally, but we're going to be trapped into believing it's store value. Just hold it. It'll go up because nation states are going to adopt it. And that may be true. Like, gold hasn't been used predominantly as a medium of exchange, and it's, you know, retained purchasing value. And right now it's been ripping lately. But that it just depends on how you define Bitcoin winning. If you think Bitcoin winning means making you rich, like, Bitcoin can certainly win under the circumstances that Lutnick outlines here. But it doesn't win in doing all of the other things that we claim are important to us, like ending the forever wars. Like, that's always my example, because that's a really big one. I would love to see us stop dropping bombs and setting up military bases all over the world. And for Bitcoin to win on that front, it has to be used as a currency, because if you're still exchanging value in something that isn't absolutely scarce, and it just isn't going to work. As long as the money printer continues, they're going to keep funding wars, and they're going to keep giving out, you know, enormous loans to countries they know can't pay it back, and then, you know, exploit them for their, you know, resources or what have you. So if you're a Bitcoiner, not just for number go up and because of all the other positive externalities that you believe a Bitcoin standard would have for the world, you have to resist the temptation to fall into this line of thinking, is my opinion. Rick, what do you think?
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? Look, I think, you know, I've been listening, especially because of this whole debate that's going on at the moment. So, you know, I'm sure we've all listened to Bitcoin Mechanic sort of talking about his issues. And one thing he said kind of really stuck with me, and he said maybe we've been a little too apologetic for some of these narratives that are being pushed, and too soft and too gentle and not pushing back as aggressively as we would have done maybe 5 years ago, right? Because we want to be warm and welcoming and fuzzy. And I've kind of, like, after listening to Bitcoin Mechanic, I'm like, yeah, we need to stop doing this, right? Like, we need to stop doing this and calling out bullshit directly when we see it. And what I'm looking at there is total bullshit. And it all kind of fits into this bigger psyop that I think is going on. I think this guy Butlick, right? He's part of the psyop. I think Saylor is part of the psyop. I remember a few months back him saying, oh, you're all, what was it, paranoid crypto anarchists, and it's just a store of value, and, you know, it's not used for a medium of exchange. And to be honest with you, I'm totally done with these false narratives and the way they're projecting it. And when you line them up next to each other, this is me fully putting my tinfoil hat on here, but look at everything that's going on, right? So we're making changes in Bitcoin Core that have the risk of bloating and slowing down the blockchain and kind of pricing out and making it difficult to transact on. You've got major hedge funds launching ETFs, which will lock up a load of Bitcoin so that it never moves again. You've got government saying we're going to put it in a strategic reserve and it'll never move again. And then you have all these prominent people in the industry that everybody, you know, is kissing their ass every day. And they're all saying the same thing, that Bitcoin's not money and shouldn't be used as a currency. And lo and behold, a guy that's part of the US, you know, state apparatus is also wants you to believe that this is a commodity and not a currency. And man, I'm there. I'm done with it all, because first of all, it's absolutely incorrect, right? It's quite easy to transact with Bitcoin, certainly easier than transacting using your bank, right? If I meet a guy and I want to do business with him and he's in Japan, I want to send him a payment. Man, it's 10 times easier with Bitcoin than figuring that out with my bank account, right? So look, I think they're nervous and they want to
capture Bitcoin.
And I guarantee you this, that freaks these more people than out. Anything else in the world is the idea that as free people, we might all just start trading with one another, doing business, interacting, building companies, building families, but doing it completely without them involved at all. That's what freaks them out. That's why they want to capture it. That's why they want you to believe that it's not money. And it's a psyop, and I think we should push back against all of these narratives. You know, I think we've been far too complacent and maybe even apologetic on the behalf of these people because, yeah, it might pump my bags and the number will go up. Well, listen, the number's going to go up anyway if you understand Bitcoin. You don't need any of these false prophets. You don't need to cheer them on when they're buying Bitcoin. They are passengers. Bitcoin's going to do what it's going to do. These are passengers, not innovators. So when they tell you that you can't use it as money, just remember that the Bitcoin way out is out here as a Bitcoin company using it as money all day, every day. So it's just frankly not true. So I don't care what this Lutnick guy has got to say. I think he's full of it.
I agree. I agree that he's full of it. To be fair to him, he has claimed to have hundreds of millions of dollars of exposure to Bitcoin. So I don't think it's that he doesn't understand Bitcoin, which maybe is more damning that he understands Bitcoin and then is peddling these narratives. But when you're put in a position like Secretary of Commerce, and now part of your job is you have to perpetuate the dollar system, and like there, you know, you have all these other balls you have to juggle besides just buying Bitcoin and storing value there and using it as money, I think conflicts of interest. He's also the guy who came out and said that we need a sovereign wealth fund so that way when we go buy a bunch of Pfizer jabs, now we're censored from YouTube, when we buy a bunch of Pfizer jabs, the federal government should be using your tax money to invest in advance, what we call insider trading in layman's terms, because now they're going to benefit from the upside of that. Like, that's like you can't dump on Pelosi and then say that what he's suggesting here is fair game. Well, just because he's a Bitcoiner and he's going to pump your bags. Like, you gotta really decide what sort of moral compass you want to have here. And I think following him into the fire on that sort of stuff is a dangerous path. I could go on this for a long time. Let's move on here. Alrighty, this is a warning to everyone listening. So scammers are mailing fake letters to Ledger users pretending to be the company and asking for seed phrases through QR codes for a supposed critical security update. All right, first of all, if you receive a letter that looks like it's from Ledger and you're worried because you have a Ledger, you have the wrong hardware wallet. So that's point number one. The second point is don't ever give up your seed phrase. Tony, I'll let you elaborate in any capacity on that.
Of course. I mean, it's horrifying to be someone who is not a techie who receives a letter like this, especially if they have a corresponding product, thinking they have to react. These things are going to continue to go on. In fact, they're going to get a lot more difficult to detect now that you've got AI, you know, on the side of all these scammers. It's literally easy money for them. The only way to counter this is to push education and make people aware that this is going on and to completely ignore it. You know, like, I mean, once you understand what it is that you have in the first place, it makes it easy to just put these things in the garbage, whether it's a phishing email, whether it's an actual letter. If somebody asks you for a seed phrase, just that in and of itself should be the biggest red flag to just destroy the thing and, you know, throw it away and never look back. But, you know, again, you know, if people don't know this little, you know, very simple, but, you know, serious fact, well, you know, they're going to get suckered in and, you know, give up whatever it is and lose their money. And this is like a playground. It's like, you know, taking candy from a five-year-old. It's easy money. It's very sad. There's no real way to stop it other than, you know, some due diligence on your part as a user. But how many people actually do this? Like, for example, using fake aliases as email, sending addresses using PO boxes, for example, things of that sort. We can push out this information, but how many people actually remember to apply it in the moment? You know, most people default to autopilot, autofill, blah blah, done, until a problem like this happens, which, you know, ties back to the whole case we made against, you know, KYC, remember, know your customer. So this is just an email leak and you're receiving phishing emails. Imagine you're storing all sorts of important information, you know, about with a third-party custodian relating to your Bitcoin. And that gets leaked because you have no control over how well they're protecting it. Well, you know, now you have a potentially even more serious problem of somebody visiting you on at your door, demanding you hand over whatever it is that you're keeping, whether it's Bitcoin or, you know, other crypto-related stuff. Very dangerous things. But again, the only way to fight it is with education. I don't see how you're going to eliminate this. Human nature is what it is. If it's an easy target, there's a lot of bullies that will always go for it because it's very, very profitable.
Yeah, and just to be clear for anyone listening, my intent with what I said was not to be condescending if you bought a Ledger. I used to be on a Ledger. Like before I found the Bitcoin Way, became a client, I had a completely different setup. It's really just an awareness thing. They've been effective marketers. It's a popular hardware wallet. I get it, but there are much, much better options. The second thing I would add to what I said is they have a service, I think it's called Ledger Recover, where they can help you recover your seed phrase. It's a closed source tool. And so for all you know, they might just be able to do that whether you opt in or not. It's supposedly an opt-in thing, but it's closed source. You don't know. There's no verification that you can have that they haven't already helped you recover your seed phrase and store it somewhere else or whatever. I'm not accusing them of doing that. I think they're probably acting in good faith, but you can't know. You can know when you have an open source hardware wallet. So just be aware that all hardware wallets are not created equal. You need something open source. You want something air-gapped. There's no reason to take the security risk of not having an air-gapped wallet, which means it doesn't plug in directly to your computer. And get something that's Bitcoin only because it's been purpose-built to store your Bitcoin securely. And they haven't had to make compromises to support other blockchains or other nonsense. Rick, what is your take on this one?
Yeah, not a lot to add, really. I agree with you, Michael, that you know this wouldn't be my preferred hardware wallet of choice for a variety of reasons, right? It supports multiple different cryptos, which just broadens your attack surface. It's got closed source software in it in some cases. I don't like this Ledger Recover service. That sounds kind of antithesis. Like, well, what's the point of having a hardware wallet if you're letting some other company look after your seed phrase anyway? That kind of seems kind of redundant. And I think, Tony, I might have heard this one from you, but it's like if you've got a Ledger hardware wallet, either throw it in the bin or give it to someone you don't like. I think I heard you say that. I agree with you there, Michael, right? Like it's not the hardware wallet I'd suggest. And you know what? Loads of people start there, but then go and explore the open source options, the air-gapped options, the Bitcoin-only options. And if you've learned a bit about how to use a Ledger, then when you move on, it won't feel so weird when you move to the next one. Just keep progressing. And the second point that Tony brought up is there's another factor here. So people are probably receiving these letters because there was a big leak, a database leak from Ledger a few years back. Man, that's a story. That's like a bad smell, that story that just will not go away, right? Because there were physical attacks linked to this leak because I think it was Sweden. I think legally you're allowed to type someone's name in. You can actually look up their address. So hackers got the data, looked up the addresses of Ledger owners and then went to their house and did all sorts of weird and wonderful things. And now, obviously, another group of hackers with the same list have said, oh, well, let's send them all letters because we have their home address. And that kind of stuff's like, it's pretty disconcerting, right? Think about, like, these people actually know where you live. That's something that should make you a little uncomfortable. And Tony's tips are very good on that, which is, number one, you don't have to use the same email that you use for everything else, right? There's services that will give you a temporary email, disposable emails. Well, man, just go and create one. If you're going to buy something that's related to Bitcoin, just go and quickly make a new one. It takes 2 minutes, right? Or yeah, use a PO box. Don't send it to your address. Because then if it does get leaked, because that could happen with the better hardware wallets as well, right? You give them your details when you order something. So just be mindful where you put your data anywhere when you're buying anything, really, especially if it's related to Bitcoin, because people want that data to target you. Not a lot else to say on top of that.
A lot of heavy news. Let's end on a fun one, guys. So this is a really good video, that funny one that Julian Figueroa shared.
I don't want to invest in Bitcoin. It's too volatile. Who are you? Are you a little bitch? What will your grandkids think about you when you tell them you thought Bitcoin was too volatile? Do you want your life savings in dollars instead? They print those at a factory, man. You still have time before Michael Saylor issues another convertible bond. Self-custody isn't as hard as they say it is. I believe in you. Your grandkids believe in you. The best time to buy Bitcoin was yesterday. The next best time is today.
Alrighty. And I can vouch for this. Self-custody is not as hard as you think. Don't let the volatility scare you away. I set up a new wallet yesterday just to practice a recovery, set up a test wallet for a webinar we're doing. It really is not that hard. It just feels daunting if you haven't gone through the process, you haven't had the right person teaching you. Gents, any comment on Julian's video? So well done.
Brilliant video, man. Couldn't have said it any better. If you have kids, especially, it's completely reckless and irresponsible not to consider Bitcoin as a savings, at least in a portion of it. Because it might, you know, there's a very, very strong possibility it's going to come bite you in the ass one day when they grow up and find out that you didn't do what you were supposed to do and when it was just staring you in the face because you were too much of a little chicken.
Well said. Rick?
Yeah, no notes. Great video. Absolutely perfect. Absolute cinema. Yeah. No notes. Really good. Loved it.
Love it. Well, for everyone tuning in, thank you for being here. Do us a big favor. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Schedule some time with a member of our team. We'd love to walk you through how we can help you take proper 100% self-custody of your Bitcoin. It is not as complicated as it may seem. Looking from the outside, we can walk you through it. No problem. We do it all day, every day. We help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones. We have a Plan B residency option as well. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Also, if you're enjoying Bitcoin Banter, which you have to be, I mean, this is an amazing show. Do me a huge favor. Subscribe to the channel. Give us a like, comment, share it with someone who might be interested in this sort of conversation. We would really appreciate that. And guys, always fun. Let's hopefully next time we have a little bit more good, exciting news. But in the meantime, the war rages on.
Thank you, Michael. It's been great.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Cheers, guys.